live on Blog Talk Radio. It's the Asylum Fantasy Football Podcast at asylumfantasyfootball.com.
Yes, indeed. We have Allie Fontana coming in. Rick, you might want to give her the number. She's trying to call in.
All right. Allie, call us at 646-478-4679. I think we got her coming on here.
That sounds good. We drop us a line, asylumfootball@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter, @AsylumFootball. Well, without further ado, Rick, let's welcome in our guest.
All right. We have Allie Fontana. She is a co-host of Twitter Fantasy Roundtable, the BFD Fantasy Football Show. She's a contributing writer to Fantasy Football Draft Book, and I'll let her tell you everything else. Allie, welcome.
Hi, guys. Nice to be here on a Friday night. I'm excited to talk about wide receivers. How are you doing?
Fantastic. We're really happy to have you on. So tell them a little bit, did Rick hit all the high points? Anything else you have going on?
Well, I did actually, I'm contributing also to BFD Fantasy Football. I'll have a blog launching of my own called Fantasy Football Confidential. And I've also written for Football Diehards. This summer I have articles in two of their magazines, and I'm very excited about that.
Awesome. Well, we're just awful glad that you took time out of your schedule to come in and talk a little wide receivers with us.
And I can't believe that we're not too far away from, you know, the major draft, fantasy draft time. So let's get going.
Yeah, it's finally here. So let's start out. I know you and Rick were having a debate already before we started. We'll get to that soon. Just looking at our rankings, obviously, we won't go through them all pick by pick. That could get boring. But we'll start at the top a little bit. Calvin Johnson, what more do you say? I guess the only question is, Allie, do you believe in all in the Madden curse?
No, I don't. I think it's a great topic of conversation. I think it can maybe get in some players' heads, and you know, I think it can definitely get in fantasy owners' heads as well. But I myself think that, you know, you do the best that you can in any given year, and some people get past it and through it without a problem, and others succumb to it, whether it's the curse or just, you know, some bad luck that year. How about you?
I don't either. I know, you know, you and I kind of jokingly bantered back and forth a couple of months ago. You know, it was getting down to Calvin and, you know, down to the final four. Which one doesn't want it? But I don't believe in it. I don't think you can curse a talent like Calvin Johnson.
One of the ones, along with Arian Foster, who was aggressively campaigning for the, you know, for the Madden cover. So obviously he doesn't care about it either.
Yeah, I do like that they now campaign for it. So I guess the only question with him, and we can move on, where do you see him? And I actually see a lot of debate on this, and I have questions myself. So in the lexicon of your draft, I think you have the big three. I've heard them called the Holy Trinity, your top three running backs. Then you get your Aaron Rodgers. Is he there in the 4-5? Do you move running backs ahead of him? How high are you willing to spend a pick on a talent like Calvin Johnson?
Well, I think that, you know, you make a choice. For some people, if they don't, I have drafted Calvin, not this year in anything I've done so far, but last year I do believe I took him. I was maybe in the ninth spot. I'm not against it. I think, you know, you have to kind of look and see and weigh how you want to build your team. If you want to go with Calvin, I'm all for it. I mean, he's definitely one of the more reliable picks that you can get in those early, if you're kind of in the spots. I mean, everybody has their favorite draft spots or places that they find less desirable. So I happen to like some other running backs, and I know that people say it's kind of old school, but I'm not really comfortable ignoring running backs in the early rounds this year. So I would perhaps take Calvin, and I wouldn't fault anybody who did. But I think he's there in that conversation. If you're willing to bypass, let's say, after you get past the Holy Three and you're not really enamored with the ones that follow.
Yeah, I think you mentioned we're a little more old school that way ourselves with running backs. What other running backs would you take ahead of a Calvin Johnson or, you know, Matthews, Chris Johnson? How far down would you be willing to go?
Well, I am a Matthews believer. I know, you know, we're not talking about running backs tonight, but yes, I think if I was drafting in four, You know, obviously league is important in scoring format, but I would probably pick Ryan Matthews and even potentially Chris Johnson ahead, just because I think Johnson bounces back, and I like the potential that Ryan Matthews has to kind of finish in that top spot, you know, if all goes well for him in San Diego. So I might do that because I think there's a lot more depth in wide receiver this year. We can also just look at receivers like Calvin Johnson. I mean, the talent's there. He may not get the numbers that he had last year, but you assume that as long as he's healthy, he's still going to produce for you. But like I said, I think there's a lot more talent at different levels in wide receiver than you see if you miss out on, like, the core running backs that you're comfortable with.
Yeah, I agree 100%. With Calvin Johnson there, and if Matthew Stafford stays healthy, that's a lethal combo right there. But, yeah, I think it's pretty unanimous that Calvin's number one. And I don't know much argument with Larry Fitzgerald being number two. How about you?
No, I like – he's a – you know, it's hard. I mean, you'd like him better if that quarterback situation there was a little more resolved. Hopefully they'll settle on a guy, and whoever it is this season, I hope, you know, if it's Cobb or if it's Skelton, that, you know, they connect with him. But we saw last year and even the year before when they went through three or four guys in 2010 and then last year with what happened, he still produces. He still puts up numbers. You only sometimes kind of get a little woeful, you know, you sort of wish that he had a better quarterback because you know that he would be producing at an even higher level, but he's very solid.
Yeah, he's had the opportunity to taste Kurt Warner for a year or two, too, and that really puts a downer on it. But, you know, he put up 1,400 yards with those guys last year, so I see what you're saying. But you put an elite quarterback behind him, goodness knows what he could do.
Yeah, I think you start
wishful
talking.
Thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. So at three, Rick, you've put out Andre Johnson. I find this interesting. I think talent-wise definitely belongs in the conversation with those top three. But here we go again with the injuries, and I find, along with the hamstring, I find the groin a troubling one to be facing already.
Well, I'll be honest with you before I turn over to Allie. I mean, he's actually starting to drop. I'm so scared of this guy. I mean, he's already tweaked a groin, and I don't know how many times I can drink the Kool-Aid on this guy. I mean, I've got him. I know when the season starts, he's not going to be this high. Allie, are you thinking the same thing, or are you keeping him? Are you got the faith in him, or what?
I got him at three, as you did. I dropped him to five only because, you know, we'll see how quickly he gets. He's supposed to return to practice Monday, I believe. It is a red flag. It is a concern. The thing is, we know that when he's healthy, he's dominant. I mean, he came back in the postseason last year. He looked like his former self on the field. He was, had a very good postseason for the Texans. So you see that he still has it when he's healthy. I don't think I certainly would never draft him in the first round. I don't think. In PPR, he's maybe a little more attractive. It's a nightmare that he doesn't score more touchdowns. And I think the other thing is that the Texans really didn't get themselves a solid number two to play opposite him. They have a couple of young guys that they drafted, which are nice, but they're rookies. Kevin Walter is serviceable, but he's not, you know, he's not a big threat. Owen Daniels last year wasn't as much a factor. He may have a resurgence, but there's really not that other guy to kind of help the cause along. So that makes him just a little, you know, less attractive in a way. But physically, when he's healthy, and you know, he has so many gifts as a receiver. So I think that if he stayed healthy and if he played even 14 games this year, he probably would finish in the top three because he is that the passing game there. But I think it's reasonable to drop him and just have a, you know, a big question mark there.
Yeah, I think, and that's the big thing with him. Always been a question mark, and it, like I said, a groin this early in the year makes me nervous. So I don't want to rush past Andre, but I saw the discussions, Allie, you and Rick were having on Twitter today about who he has at number four, and I'm curious to hear him defend it and hear your thoughts on it. Rick, at number four, you slot in Victor Cruz, much higher than most people we've seen out there.
Yeah, I'm high on Victor Cruz. So, I don't know really how else to defend him. The guy put up 1,536 yards last year, 82 receptions, 9 touchdowns. Yeah, not Calvin numbers, but I just think, the Giants are primed. They got they lost Manningham, I realize that, but Reuben Randall looks pretty good. If Knicks can get, through this foot injury, I mean, they're a lethal duo out there, and I just like Cruz a little better than Knicks myself this year. So, and I don't know. Eli Manning, he puts up the yards. Maybe he throws some picks and stuff, but that's really not a – that's not going to affect the wide receivers as far as, their numbers, because he throws for numbers and touchdowns. And I'm just high on Cruz. And, call me an idiot, but, I have no problem putting him there.
And I have no problem calling you an idiot, but we'll let Allie comment now.
Well, I don't have him that high. I think I'm a little bit concerned about Hakeem Nicks and when he's returning. We haven't seen that yet. I think if Nicks if Hakeem Nicks is back on the field, then I like Cruz a lot better, simply because I think he'll play out of the slot, and he just seems to me to be. I mean, we don't really know what to expect with him. Let's say if Nicks misses any time, and he has double coverage, we have to see if they have. I know they drafted Reuben Randall, but he is a rookie too. He's still learning the game at the pro level. They don't have, Martellus Bennett, we've heard mixed things coming out of OTAs and camp. I like if they do get Bradshaw back and David Wilson, they'll be an interesting combo, and they certainly will benefit from having, a stronger run game. But we have to see who's going to be opposite Cruz if Nicks misses time, and right now that's a big question mark. So, and again, if he's the sole guy, the main focus of defenses, I think that's going to be a little more challenging for him. So I like him in PPR a little bit higher. I have him at 14 because I'd certainly feel more comfortable taking him as my wide receiver 2 than as a wide receiver 1. That's just me, but I'm not knocking him. A lot of people like to say what he did last year was fluky. I think he's the real deal, but I do think I want to see it a little more, and I'd feel better if that passing game was just more fleshed out right now.
Yeah, and I think excellent points, and you see that a lot on a lot of teams where you're down to one receiver. There's questions at the second spot. I think it hurts Andre as well. So I think we've gotten to the point, if you're looking at your mock drafts, at your redraft leagues, you're getting to the point now you've got the top 3 or 4 running back or receivers off. I know this is a receiver show, but we've hit that point where now you're seeing Rob Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham going, at that point of the drafts after these first three receivers go. Do you subscribe, do you buy into the theory at all that with the numbers these guys put up, you can consider them, while they're a tight end, almost your number one receiver? Do you buy into taking these guys this high in the low first, early second round?
Oh, I probably would. I haven't done it yet. I was going to do it in a pros versus Joe's draft. If Jimmy Graham fell for me, it fell to me. He went, one spot ahead. I don't know that I'd make a practice of it. And again, I think it would depend on what the scoring system was. Looking at Jimmy Graham's stats last year, he did catch 99 passes, and he had 147 targets or something like that. And he himself said that he should have had 30 more catches based on just some missed things and stuff. And again, he's learning too, and he doesn't have. The thing I love about Jimmy Graham is that he didn't play football very long. So he's still a developing talent. So we haven't even seen the best of him yet, which I think is very exciting. So I think I wouldn't do it with every league I had, but depending on the circumstances, I would potentially take either Graham or Gronkowski. I'm more inclined to take Graham because I think he could actually this year outproduce what he did last year. not convinced that'll happen with Gronkowski, though I do think he'll still be a solid producer. And so, yes, but I don't believe, I think you either have to go for the tight end early or the quarterback early, but not both. I've seen people do the quarterback and the tight end, and you know, then you're into the situation that we talked about with running backs.
Okay, I agree. I think Graham is going to outperform Gronk just because I like New Orleans offense, and there's no Aaron Hernandez there as well to hawk catches away from him. So I agree with you 100% there. And I noticed on your rankings you had Greg Jennings at 4. That's certainly, you know, I have no problem with that at all. And we can just move on from there. You know, here's one question that's really been on a lot of people's minds. Who do you like? And I think I know the answer is because I've seen your rankings. But Julio Jones, Roddy White?
Right now I have Roddy White, and again, I've made adjustments. I have Roddy White at 5. Which I think I had, if you're looking at the draft book, that was one I did before. There was another one that followed, but, you know, you're always updating these situations. So I have Roddy White at 5, and I have Julio Jones at 8.
Yeah, I've got Jones at 5 and White at 7, and I'm softening on White myself. I really like Roddy White, and I just have a hard time going against him, and I think, I just have a feeling when draft gets here, if I'm down to choosing between the two, say in a PPR league, I think I'm going White every time. But I don't know. There's a lot there with Julio Jones. Rick, I know you're a lot higher on him than I am. What's your case for
him? Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest case just for me is home run potential is what I like and what I see with Julio Jones. You know what you get in Roddy White. I just see that offense turn. What I'm amazed by, I can't remember a time where two teammates playing the same position are going nearly back-to-back in nearly every draft. It's impressive. I think it's a coin flip. I like the home run guy. I like the high-risk, high-reward type of guy. I think if you're playing it safe, and to your point, Rick, if you're playing PPR, I think Roddy White's probably the safer of the two bets.
Yeah, and I don't know. Okay, I just want to ask Allie. I'm really high on Brandon Marshall this year too. I think them being connected, him and Cutler, as I'm referring to, back together again, and now that Forte's in camp, things all seem to be happy there in Chicago, and I'm really starting to like this combination. Are you buying into Brandon Marshall as say a top 5 or 6 wide receiver?
Rank there, but I think he could certainly finish there. I do think that this season we will see the Bears run their offense through Cutler. Even with Forte back, I think we're going to see some changes there. And, I do like Cutler this year, pairing him up again with Marshall. I like Alshon Jeffrey as, a late season bloomer, but I think he's going to have a role in the offense too. Obviously, don't expect too much from rookies, but I think at some point he'll be relevant as well and for fantasy purposes. They have potentially a tight end or two tight ends that they could use a little more than they have in the past. So I really do like Brandon Marshall. I mean, what we've seen is sometimes, his focus goes off track. He seems to have kind of come to terms with some of his personality issues and some maybe off-the-field type of stuff that's gotten in the way. And he seems very excited about football again in a way that maybe we haven't seen in a number of years. Last year, he dropped a couple of touchdowns. I mean, it was frustrating. I did own him on a few teams last year. And while he was solid producer most weeks, he left points on the field there. And that was kind of annoying as an owner, but hopefully this year he ups his touchdown total and we see him approach that 100 catches that he had in the past with Cutler. So yes, I do like him.
Yeah, and I think you look at him, like, to your point, left a lot of points on the field. And I almost felt as if in watching it, if you hadn't looked at stats, he had a down year. And what I'm considering a down year, he had 81 catches for 1,200 yards, only the 6 touchdowns. I like the hookup with Jay Cutler. Your point is excellent that he seems happy. And in a guy with off-the-field issues, with things like that, with personality issues, to be somewhere where he's supposedly happy could make a big difference. So let's jump around a little bit. We won't just keep going through the list. I'm curious. We had talked about it. I know we keep going to this well, and I apologize to everyone out there. But a few episodes back, I had the opportunity to interview Patrick Johnson, former Ravens wide receiver, who had stated on Wes Welker, we know what he is. He's a huge PPR guy. But stating with the holdout, with the way the Patriots do business, he had fears of Wes Welker this year, afraid that his targets would go down due to the way things were handled and the way the Patriots organization is run. Do you see any type of step back for a guy like Wes Welker, considering the contract issues as well as Brandon Lloyd coming to town, the two tight end situation? Is there enough balls to go around, and do you see Welker continuing at that torrid 100 to 120 point or 20 catch range each year?
I mean, we don't know. I don't think they're going to ice him out of the passing game. I mean, they're a competitive team. He delivers when he's on the field. You know, any one of the receivers, for example, could have their catch rate go down a little bit, or their opportunities to target take a step back. I still think he does what he does, and he does it very well. Maybe he won't get as many red zone ops, or, you know, something like that. I'm not thinking he's falling off a cliff this year. I think Brandon Lloyd adds a different dimension to their offense, and I think, you know, that can be a good thing for everyone. You know, I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing, and he may lose some targets, but I don't think he's a guy that you're going to take in a PPR league and regret taking him. You know, I think he's still going to come through for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that vein, a lot of people, when we listen to the shows and when you read different things, Brandon Lloyd's a name is a guy who's everyone's targeting as a breakout star. Again, I guess the question goes back to now with Lloyd, with Hernandez, with Gronkowski, with Welker, is there enough balls to go around in New England for a guy like Lloyd to be a standout fantasy receiver?
He knows that offense. He can just catch anything. I mean, he's so acrobatic, and he's a very smart route runner. I think that he will definitely add something to that. They didn't bring him there not to use him. And, you know, the age-old question is, you know, what are they going to if they're how are they going to use the run game the way they have in the past, which is situationally, which they probably will. So I just think that hopefully this means – I mean, what I haven't done yet is move Brady ahead of Aaron Rodgers, but I could conceivably see if this offense, firepower-wise, is as good as what's on paper, that he could finish perhaps ahead of Aaron Rodgers this season. So, I mean, that's how much talent he has there. And I also think that Aaron Hernandez is going to be used in a way that we – you know, even more than we saw last year. I mean, he's kind of the forgotten guy there, but I really like him, and they use him all over the field. So it'll remain to be seen. I think that maybe it isn't a great idea to kind of pull the trigger too early on Brandon Lloyd. I think if you draft him as a wide receiver 3, there's less risk doing that. And if all goes well, he could deliver, you know, wide receiver 2 or high 2 potential. But they just have too many weapons there, I think, to think he's going to be, you know, the top guy in the league. I know some people subscribe to that. I can't see it with who else he's competing with for targets on the field. How about you?
Yeah, I think he's a much better upgrade over Deion Branch, that's for sure. I'm like you. I can't get him too high. And I look into some of these ADPs. I just printed some out today. It's the most current one that I've seen, and he's right at like 5.04. But the interesting thing is, he's going, you know, in these the highs and lows. He's going as high is 3.1, and then he's going into the sevens in low. So I think a lot of people are seesawing back and forth. Some are really seeing some big things out of him. I'm one of these, I'm like you, I'm not going to be drafting him too high. Try to get him at good value, and if he delivers, then you got a good steal.
I mean, that's the best thing. It's always kind of like we sometimes if there's a guy you really like, you go after him where you want him, because if, especially if you participate in enough mock drafts, you just know sort of what the sweet spot is if you want someone. But I do think that we get enamored with potential sometimes, and you can't always draft based on the potential. You really have to kind of look for value too. And so I agree. Like I said, if you can get him as your, you know, as a three, you just don't have that same risk if, in fact, he doesn't produce. But I can't see it happening, barring an injury or some kind of weird implosion, because, I mean, they have him there for a reason, and he knows that playbook, which is very comforting.
Yeah, yeah, difficult playbook. One Chad Johnson never did gather up, so bringing somebody in who knows the playbook could set up for a big year. So let's talk about, I can't believe we've gotten almost a half an hour into any fantasy football show without the name Peyton Manning coming up. A lot of talk. Most people seem to be ranking Demaryius Thomas above Eric Decker. However, a lot of talk, a lot of people say, if you want to call it a sleeper, who they think may end up with the better rapport with Peyton Manning in being Decker. What is your opinion? I think both of them, they're values rise significantly. Whose value do you think makes the biggest rise?
If we take maybe the first week in camp, we saw, or prior to yesterday, because yesterday I started seeing a lot of stuff coming out of the Denver coverage on all these catches that Thomas was making, etc. You know, Peyton Manning had been talking a lot about Eric Decker. And when that happens, I mean, again, that reminds me of him talking about Austin Colley a few seasons back. I think if you're in PPR, Eric Decker will probably deliver a better value for you than Demaryius Thomas. But I really like both of them. I think they could both be top 20 guys, assuming Peyton's arm holds up. And because it's not really – I mean, obviously you need to see him take a hit, but – it's really that strength and how that's going to sustain itself over the course of the season. We have to kind of see that. So I think they both have great potential, and it's kind of pick the guy that you want depending on your draft flow. I think in standard scoring, Thomas is probably maybe going to be a better producer for you. In PPR, you get a little better value on Decker, but let's face it, if all this hype continues, both guys are going to go earlier. And we're kind of doing some of that, we're the cause of some of that, because many fantasy analysts are very high on both guys. So,
yeah, there's a lot to be said. You know, when Peyton Manning goes into an offense, there's always that potential, and, you know, people can see stars, that's for sure. I mean, you know, they think about the Colts days, and Decker and Thomas are two talented receivers, and Peyton Manning can make them look even better, that's for sure. You know, here's a guy pretty highly rated, you know, as much as even a month ago, and he seems to be falling somewhat, you know, with his holdout. And I'm talking about Mike Wallace holding out with Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh turns around and gives a long-term deal to Antonio Brown. Wallace still holding out, you know, with a brand-new offensive coordinator, whole new scheme coming in. You know, I see him falling. The more he holds out, the worse it's going to get, because Pittsburgh's not going to talk to him. And I think either A, somebody's going to be really disappointed because they took him high, thinking he's going to still be okay whenever he does come, or B, he's going to fall really low, and, you know, maybe somebody will get a value. But I'm really getting away from him, and I really like Antonio Brown better.
And I like Mike Wallace as a talent. You know, this whole situation seems to be, I mean, we may find out that he got some bad advice. I've heard some, you know, different stories about what happened sort of during the negotiations there at the very end. I do think I had him in my top 10 a month ago, but I've since been redoing my between, you know, arrests and injuries and things like this and holdouts, the constant state of retooling your ranking. So I have dropped him to 14. I think that if he falls in drafts, I do believe he will play this year, and I do believe he will play well. I think it's unfortunate that he is not in camp learning that offense. It isn't what they were doing last year. I'm not down on Mike Wallace from a talent perspective. I did draft, and I think I picked Antonio Brown up off of waivers in a couple leagues, and maybe I drafted him as a flyer last year. Will he, if he's the number one guy, how will he absorb double coverage if Wallace for some reason pulls a Vincent Jackson, which I, you know, hopefully he doesn't. We need to see. In PPR, I think Antonio Brown is awesome. It'd be great if he put some more touchdowns on the board there himself. And so, you know, I think you have to kind of look for Wallace as a value. I wouldn't take him as early as I would have a month ago or if he was in camp. So I think that's, you know, he may be a value for someone who does roll with him because, I mean, his talent is undeniable.
Yeah, no question about it, and that speed. And you hit on it. My biggest fear, I think the biggest victim in the Mike Wallace saga may be Antonio Brown. Has his money, started to break out towards the end of last year. I, along with most people, had him set for a huge breakout this year. I think as this drags on, or if Wallace doesn't show up or comes in late and doesn't learn the offense, I don't know if Antonio Brown has the size necessarily, has the skills, the route running skills to be the number one guy, to shake the double coverage. I don't think Emmanuel Sanders is ready to emerge here in Pittsburgh in this area. They've talked about him for years, just hasn't seemed to be able to find the field health-wise, personal issues, for any number of reasons. I don't like an Antonio Brown with Emmanuel Sanders on the other side nearly as well as I like an Antonio Brown with Mike Wallace on the other side.
Like collateral damage, you know, with some of these, with these holdouts and these other odds and injury situations. So let's hope that he comes to his senses and he gets his butt into camp. And I know I read a lot because I do think it's important. I'm a big contract person. So I always kind of like to get into what the numbers really are. And then looking at the Antonio Brown contract again, there's still room there for them to do a deal with Mike Wallace based on cap space and how they structure these deals and giving them money, assigning bonuses as opposed to building it into the contract so it's not part of cap in the same way. So there's lots of ways they could do something, but they surely won't negotiate with him unless he goes, you know, he shows up. So let's hope he comes to his senses.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Definitely the Steeler way, as Hines Ward can attest to. So let's move on. A guy who came back out of nowhere last year, really helped Cam Newton to a surprise big first season, a guy whose career seemed to be on the downslope until last year. Do you have faith that Steve Smith can string together another season like he did last year?
Well, I think he's another guy that seemed re-energized. I think it'll also be helpful with him because we saw there at the end defense has started to, you know, cover him and they sort of got the rhythm of that, the whole Cam Newton deal. But it's a full off season. Love to see Brandon LaFell actually step up. Like to see him use Greg Olsen, Cam Newton use Greg Olsen more in the offense. So I do think that Steve Smith, based on what we saw last year, has another year. I'm not writing his sort of, you know, last hurrah yet either. But it's interesting to see the variations and where people rank him because a lot of people saw him kind of fall off a little bit there toward the end based on, you know, actually Cam's performance in many regards, but also they didn't really have anybody else in that number two spot. So it's so interesting, again, to see how important it is to have more than one target there in your offense. And he's another guy that I think could be helped by a LaFell emerging, for example.
Ah, that's the guy. That's
you're excited, aren't you, Rick?
Yeah, not really. I'm a little high on LaFell this year. I think, you know, third year guy. I think he has, you know, I'm not saying, you know, he's going to be Mr. Stud out there, but I really think he has the opportunity to excel and be a very good value to somebody, you know, late in the draft. I mean, I don't see, you know, 65 to 70 catches out of his realm if they're, you know, if their defense is competitive and, you know, they can stay on their game. You know, Cam Newton, a lot of people say he's going to step back. I don't think he's going to be running as much. The passing numbers probably should stay the same. I can't see them really going down. How about you?
I think that this off season, I mean, he surprised everyone last year, and I think also his passing surprised people. Yes, he had issues to work on, but again, I looked at last year and the whole lockout situation and just the lack of camp. I mean, just so many things just really worked against a lot of players last year. And so when you see a guy like Cam Newton and some other rookies and Andy Dalton, I mean, people who made the best out of a situation that probably wasn't great, I have every faith that he also seemed maybe more teachable than people gave him credit for. And I've, you know, heard a lot of good things so far coming out of camp about, you know, what he's working on and so forth. So I think he should actually be a better passer. And we actually do want to see more balance. And maybe some of those running backs that we loathe to draft right now because we can't count on them could actually get some more work. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I don't know if you read this, but I saw a tweet today that somebody was interviewing the coach in Carolina, and he planned on using Mike Tolbert in a Jeremy Shockey-like role. That was the tweet.
A Jeremy Shockey-like role?
It was. I think I even have it. I think I retweeted it because it was a mind blower, and I wanted to have it in my, you know, to go back and reference it. So while we're talking, I'll find that. But you know, they say that he was going to play fullback, but it said Ron Rivera told, and this is from Evan Silva, told NFL Network, the Panthers view Mike Tolbert as essentially Jeremy Shockey's replacement and brings more versatility to the table. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to say.
Yeah, that's a stunner. That changes everything in terms of Mike Tolbert's value, especially in a PPR league.
Yeah, so we'll have to see what happens with that. But I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. And, you know, when you see some, because that's what we've all kind of wondered, why the heck would Mike Tolbert go to Carolina in a sense? And then how are they going to use him with, you know, D'Angelo and Jonathan Stewart and Cam there? So that just seemed like an interesting little nugget there. So I figured I'd just bring it up since we were talking about Carolina.
Yeah, definitely. That's a fascinating piece of information there. we'll move on. We're talking contracts earlier. Dwayne Bowe, here's a guy, top 10, top 12 potential, has a Matt Castle problem as well as a holdout problem now. I guess maybe same question with Mike Wallace. How long does he hold out before his value really starts to tank?
Well, it's interesting. His people or Bowe himself have said that he doesn't plan on missing any games. He's not holding out, et cetera. Again, we'd feel much better if his butt was in camp. On the other side, one of my articles was on sort of late round boomer bust guys, and I happened to roll with Jonathan Baldwin as one of the people that I liked as, you know, sort of a boom guy if you could get him late, and he has definitely sort of stepped up in all of the off-season workouts and through this first week at camp. He's apparently matured. You know, he's not picking fights with, well, Thomas Jones isn't there anymore, but he's sort of gotten it now. He's learned the playbook. He's looking good on the field. So, you know, whether I don't think he replaces Bowe this year. There's Steve Breston there. I like the fact that Tony Moriaki's there, Kevin Boss. So they have this, it's a shame because they have this offense now with both Charles there and Hillis. I mean, I really like Kansas City this year as a team that's going to step up. We'd all love it if they had a quarterback other than Matt Castle, but we've seen that he can produce under the right circumstances. So Bowe should be there. because actually, if he doesn't get the deal this year with Kansas City, he's going to be playing for one somewhere else next year. So I do think we see him, in camp at some point, or at least on the field.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. He says he's not holding out. He's not going to miss any games, but you don't show up to camp. To me, you're almost holding out. I mean, that's a recipe for disaster sometimes, you know, when they do hold out. I just hope he gets to camp so people can start seeing a little bit of, you know, how he's progressing or whatever. But how about a guy like Kenny Britt? Here's a guy with all the talent in the world, you know, gets arrested 1,000 times. I mean, he's got to be facing some sort of stiff suspension coming down, I'm guessing. And do you even look at this guy this year?
I was really excited about Kenny Britt because I had been, again, I had done an extensive piece on injuries and following up on sort of his path back to recovery. There was always the chance that even with this police incident, notwithstanding, that, you know, he might not be the guy early on in terms of, you know, he's still coming back from a multiple ligament injury and then the multiple surgeries, even in the off season, he's had two. But again, he had sort of had the work ethic there. He was rehabbing the way he should have been. There was a lot of sort of buzz. So it's hard not to be enamored with his talent, but I'm just sort of, he's a guy now where I've moved him down my ranking significantly, mainly because we actually don't know what's going to happen in terms of a suspension, if there will be one this year. A lot of it depends on, well, we could see Goodell sort of going off on his own and implementing some sort of, you know, league penalty, but they usually wait until these cases play out in court. So I heard this afternoon, I guess the NFL Network was at the Titans camp, and the coach was saying that they're going to try to work him into some preseason action within the next couple of weeks, that he's sort of on progress physically from his last surgery. But he's a guy that I just don't know that I want to deal with this year on one of my fantasy teams.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't know. You don't know when the court case is going to happen. It's a shame. 8 arrests. The kid's got all the talent in the world, plus the health issues to go with it. Just almost a sad story. You hate to see it. Moving on, and listening to your shows recently, I know one of your partners agrees with me in that I'm starting to buy a little bit into Darius Heyward-Bey this year and his ability, his ability and speed. Carson Palmer with a full off season. I'm looking for him to have a breakout. I think more the question is Heyward-Bey. Who do you think emerges as that number one target in Oakland? And if one does, do they have any true fantasy value?
I think in some ways, you know, Heyward-Bey looks a little more like the prototypical wide receiver one in the Oakland offense. I do think it's, you know, it's always a matter of trust. You need to see it on the field. Carson Palmer seems very excited about his receivers. It did seem like he sort of started, you know, coming into his own last year. I guess I want to believe it. I drafted him in the pros versus Joes. I also really liked Denarius Moore. But, you know, they're different players. And every one of those receivers basically has an injury issue of one sort or another. So it's kind of like, you know, you're really rolling the dice with any one of them. But I could see him, again, depends on where you take him. I also pulled the ADP off of my fantasy league today. So where is he going? Let's just take a look because, again, I think it's about value. I wouldn't feel comfortable with him as anything, you know, more than a wide receiver three. He's the 44th wideout off the board in non-PPR. So, you know, I think as a fourth receiver, or maybe if you're in a deep league, as a third, if you really believe him. I know, like, Jim Day really believes in Heyward-Bey. You know, draft him accordingly. I personally would feel safer with him as a four with upside or as a low three.
Right. And I'm looking at some ADPs right here. I have Moore going almost a full two rounds ahead of him, which is kind of surprising to me. I had him pretty close, about the same. And I see Denarius Moore like 8.07 and Darius Hayward Bay at 10.05. So, you know, that's a significant difference there. And it appears to me that Bay would be a better value right there for sure.
Bay currently is the better value for sure. I think, you know, as an upside guy, I think Moore may be a little... The challenge is, I think that Hayward Bay may be the more consistent play for you. Like, you may get so many points out of him. You know, there are always those receivers that can sort of disappear in a given week, and that may be the case with Denarius Moore, whereas with Hayward Bay, provided that, you know, he holds onto the ball and stays healthy, I think you get maybe a more consistent production out of him. So, and then if you get him a couple rounds later, then, you know, that becomes a better value.
Yeah, no question about it. So it's definitely something interesting, someone to watch some value could get late. So speaking of value, as we're getting close to the end here, who are some guys you're targeting, some sleepers, I guess, for lack of a better term? Who are guys who you think will be the surprise players this year that people could target?
I kind of do like, if you're looking for in Seattle, I do like a Doug Baldwin. I think that, you know, it depends on how that quarterback situation shakes out, but in a late round, a guy like Doug Baldwin, he delivered very well, particularly in PPR format. I do think he's best as a slot guy. If you're not in PPR, he's still a good fit for depth. Also feel similarly about Danny Amendola. He's back and healthy and, you know, back to having that chemistry with Sam Bradford, which I think will be very important for, you know, that offense there. It was sorely missed last year after he went down in the first game. So he's another guy that you can get very late, and whether you're get him in PPR or you get him in standard scoring. You know, he doesn't score a lot of touchdowns, but it's his new offense this year. Not sure we've seen everything that he can do. So he's another guy that's late. I mentioned that I do like Jonathan Baldwin a lot. Again, not early, but as a late-round flyer, it'd be nice to see what he can do. I'm also liking Titus Young. I do think that, you know, some of his immaturity issues can be a concern, but he also seems to have gotten the message this year and the talents there. I think he bypasses Nate Burleson this year. Again, if you're taking a flyer on a guy in a passing offense like that, I think Titus Young would be a good value for fantasy owners.
Yeah, no question about it. He's a name that quite often comes up. Rick, I know you're high on Torrey Smith in Baltimore as a guy who started a small breakout last year, all the home run potential in the world, and you look for him to take that step up as a number one receiver in Baltimore.
Yeah, I do. My biggest drawback with Torrey Smith probably is Joe Flacco. But, you know, for all the, for lack of a better term, flack that he's taken, you know, Flacco... Yeah, I know, it's terrible. But he's a solid quarterback. I'd like to see his numbers come up some, you know, and maybe some chemistry building with Torrey Smith, you know, can certainly help elevate that. He's certainly a deep ball threat, you know, and it opens things up for, you know, Bolden and so forth. But I do like Torrey Smith. And, you know, I would have to wait, you know, to get him at the right spot, but I think he could be a real good value. Allie, do you see much... Do you like Torrey Smith? I mean, my biggest concern with him is Flacco. I've never been a Flacco fan. However, I do like Torrey Smith.
As well, and again, last year, you know, the problem with him was that he was inconsistent. He dropped some balls, and then he made some amazing catches. So I think, though, again, he was a guy that was playing injured, double sports hernia for most of the season, but he played, and he didn't have an off season. So I look for this year with a full, you know, a full camp, a full series of OTAs, all of that extra time, to work, and we needed to see him as a more polished and complete receiver, but the talent's there, and he definitely provides speed in that offense, you know, the downfield speed that they really didn't have. So it would be nice also if, you know, we know that Dennis Pitta broke his hand, but if, you know, their tight ends were not very consistent last season, and I think just having more weapons actually is a good thing on that offense, and so I also like Torrey Smith. I'd rather not take him until this, you know, eighth round if possible. I think, you know, there's a fine line sort of between, you know, overpaying for someone and maybe getting the right value on him. So, again, I think he can deliver high wide receiver two production, but I'm not sure that we can – you want to draft him like that just based on the offense that he plays in.
Yeah, no question about it. So we talked about some guys who had a chance to break out. Any potential busts you see? Anybody you're avoiding? Anybody you see taking a step back this season?
The way players is Sidney Rice. I can't do it. I drafted him as a late pick when he had the breakout season with Brett Favre. And then I had him the last two seasons, and it's been, you know, 17 missed games out of 32. He's a guy, again, where you get excited by the talent and the potential, but was that for, can he ever do it again? I mean, I don't know. And add to the fact that the quarterback situation there is still unsettled. They brought in Braylon Edwards, Antonio Bryant. They have a whole sort of, you know, just grouping of receivers there. I'm just going to stay away from Sidney Rice this year until we see what, you know, he does. And can he last through a full season and stay healthy? And just not sure that he can. Another guy that I kind of had big hopes that he was maybe going to he turned the corner is Michael Crabtree. And now again, you know, he's already injured and missing camp time himself. So I mean, again, at some point he's worth drafting, but I think I might have had him as like a borderline three earlier, and now I've dropped him to like a wide receiver four just because it seems like it's the same old Crabtree situation again.
Yeah, he's been one of the more disappointing, fantasy-wise, especially NFL-wise as well. You coming out of college, a name you're looking for. One guy I look at, and, you know, just based on drops and being in fear of the offense, a guy I hear actually as a potential sleeper, as a guy creeping up, is Greg Little. Here's a guy I don't trust, I don't feel comfortable with. Which side of Greg Little do you land on?
He's a guy I'm sort of, you know, I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt last year. I think I drafted him late in a couple of leagues, and he did have so many darn drops. But, again, he had sat out the year before because, I mean, he hadn't played football in 2 years because of the NCAA stuff. And then, of course, we didn't have an off season. Colt McCoy, I mean, it's just a disaster. I don't know that in a redraft league I would be drafting him. I think there are other guys that have similar upside and potential that I feel more confident in taking. So I'm with you there. I think he does have talent, but I maybe will take a pass and wait to see it develop this year, see how he does, if there's some improvement there before I use a draft pick on him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, that's unanimous here. I'm the same way. Here's a guy that's interesting to me is, two of them. Miles Austin and Dez Bryant, yeah, you know, of course, Dez Bryant, he had the little off-field issues, and Jerry Jones is down on him. Austin's had, like, the injury bug. You know, they're roughly the same size, but Bryant, you know, just appears and plays so much bigger. And, you know, he seems like more of a dominant force out there. But, you know, Austin still, when he's out there, he puts up the numbers. Who do you like the best coming out of those two? If you're, you know, in a situation, you know, you have to pick between the two of them.
I think I would, even though Austin's been kind of, you know, a bit of a mess the past two seasons, and, you know, he's had his production and the stats have been kind of all over the map. I actually do believe that Tony Romo trusts him more. and that when push comes to shove, he's going to look for Miles Austin before Dez Bryant. You know, he didn't. He's also maybe going to be of a better value. I mean, it doesn't appear that there's going to be any ramification from the Dez Bryant incident with his mother this season, though maybe a talking to and so forth. So I just don't. It's like you get enamored by Dez's talent and that potential, but then he doesn't. He also disappears in games, and I just feel like I would rather draft this season Miles Austin. I feel like he came, you know, he's back, he's healthy. He didn't show up for camp last year, and he's admitted this. He was out of shape, and when you're out of shape, you are more injury prone. So that kind of was a big setback for him last year. So if you can get him in the fourth or the fifth round or something like that, I think I'd like Miles Austin and think that he'll have a return to kind of the numbers that he had from a couple years back.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think probably definitely the safest of the two, maybe Dez Bryant with a higher upside potential, but Miles Austin certainly the safer of the two. Well, we're just about out of time. Allie, we want to thank you so much for joining us. It's been a really good time. Why don't you take the last word here and let everyone know where they can find you.
Active on Twitter, so please feel free to follow me on Twitter, at Allie, A-L-L-I-E, Fontana, F-O-N-T-A-N-A. And I also, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, I co-host the Twitter Fantasy Football Roundtable on Wednesday nights at 8 and the BFD Fantasy Football Show on Wednesdays at 10 p.m. And I know that we'll be having you as a guest very soon on the Twitter Roundtable, and I'm looking forward to turning the tables.
Yes, I can't wait. I'm sure it'll be fun, and I'll be double-teamed.
Well, yes, and we have four people in that little circle there, so it'll be fun. And it's just like I said, it's great to be on talking about wide receivers with you. Can't believe we're in August, and the Hall of Fame game this weekend. We'll get to see. I'm going to be anxious to see what Kevin Cobb looks like. I know they're going to use him for to see what he has to offer this particular weekend. It's been a long time coming.
Real quick, who do you see falling out of there, Cobb or Skelton?
I think it's really Cobb. I think it's Cobb to lose. I'd actually like to see him. I mean, call me crazy, but I mean, I am originally from Philadelphia. I know he was in a good system in Philly. I'd like to kind of see the guy redeem himself, but, you know, if he doesn't hold up, if he can't cut it, it's going to be John Skelton, and maybe they'll make a different decision in 2013. But for fantasy purposes, I hope the best guy shows up and makes those receivers relevant this year.
Exactly. Well, we certainly enjoyed having you on, and we appreciate, you taking the time to talk to us. It was a really good time.
You're an excellent host and very welcoming. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again. I hope to talk to you soon.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Rick. Well, there we go. They get a perspective from a true expert. Definitely raised the IQ in the room tonight.
Oh yeah, man. You just heard. You just heard a hit. I mean, when she left, it just boom, gone.
Right back to the floor. That's right. Joe's right back in the gut.
Great having her on. I mean, it's great having different perspectives in. Like we mentioned before, we like fighting back and forth, and it's nice seeing here's Gertrude. Nice having an intelligent, just a nice perspective in there. It's really enjoyable to get, the more the merrier.
Absolutely. So
and
thanks again.
Check us out at asylumfantasyfootball.com.
Absolutely. Any questions? It's about time to make those lineup and keeper decisions. Shoot us an email, show@asylumfantasyfootball.com. On Twitter, @AsylumFootball. Check out Ali's show. Check out our show. Check out all the shows on great stuff. We will be back on Tuesday talking quarterbacks with a special guest. And I'm sorry, Rick, I'm blanking on his name. Do you remember? Nope. All right. Well, we'll tweet it out until Tuesday. We'll see you. Take care.
Worms all week. Cleaned up, clean cut, and clean shaved. I got the cover off the 68. Fired it up and let them horses sing a little pretty thing, a little tan leg Georgia dream, but she's rocking them holy jeans. Baby, what you got going on Saturday? You know, word's got it, there's gonna be a party out of town about half a mile. Four-wheel drive and big mud ties. Must get down and wine. Oh, baby, you can find me in the back jack tailgate, sitting around watching all these pretty things. Get down in that Georgia clay and I'll find Pete at the bottom of a real tall cold drink. I'm chilling with some Skinner and some old hay. Let's get this thing started. It's my kind of party. Baby,